Bonjour et bienvenue à la balado-diffusion du colloque « Éthique des médias, de l'information au marché » tenu à Montréal en avril 2009. Welcome to the audio podcast of the Media Ethics from Information to Markets Conference that took place in Montreal in April 2009.
So we're going to end the day talking about, from the point of view of someone who works on both ethics and is a blogger, talking about partly about social isolation. Like almost everybody else who's spoken today, my presentation has shifted a bit since I promised the title, but I will talk a bit about social isolation. That's my boring university affiliation. What you really need to know, of course, since there are a few dozen or a few hundred students a year who know me the other way, but this is the way, oddly, I've become better known in the world among an admittedly still select group of people. This is the blog I write, and I'll say a little bit more about that in a minute. So here's a quick outline of what I'm going to talk about over the next 25 or so minutes, maybe even a little shorter than that. I'm going to talk a bit about my blog, very briefly, just to give you a sense of where I'm coming from as a blogger. I'm going to give a bit of a mea culpa, admit partly why I'm unqualified to give this talk. Next, talk about give you a bit of a sense of the shape of the blogosphere from a point of view of professional ethics, you might say. I'm going to talk a bit about journalist versus non-journalist bloggers. Not versus as in antagonism between them, but just comparing and contrasting the two. I'll talk a little bit about social isolation, and then I'll, just for the sake of argument, give you an argument against ethics. What else are ethics professors for? And then I'll offer some conclusions. Okay, now you have a rough idea of where we're heading. Okay, so here's my blog. That's actually just a screen capture of what it looks like if you looked at it. Today, fairly standard bloggish kind of blog. It's got some pictures, it's got some text, it's got some opinion, it's got some links. I've been doing this since November 05, which doesn't exactly make me an early blogger, but it gives me, in the blogosphere, writing 3.5 years pretty much makes you somebody's grandfather. I've been doing it for a while, nearly continuously. I post about 3 times a week. It's not a daily post, a blog. It's not one of these, you know, I blog 10 times a day kinds of blogs, but it's reasonably frequent. So if you look back in the archives, I've got over 500 entries on various issues in business ethics, all archived, of course, because the technology makes that simple. In terms of readership, it's a little hard to tell because with RSS feeds and stuff like that these days, I don't even know. The limits of my tech savvy, I don't know how to track news aggregators. I don't even know if you can do that, frankly. But based on sort of hits on the web page, I get probably looks like 200 or 300 readers each day, which is on any given day more people than have ever read every peer-reviewed paper I've written, almost certainly. And I've got a reasonably good publication track record, but this is certainly where most people get to read me. The goal of the blog is that I try to examine business ethics issues in the news. And what I try to do is give people not a philosophy lecture. I'm a philosophy lecturer and professor in my day job. But what I try and do is give one step deeper than most reporters have time to do, right? So I know every time I get interviewed by a reporter about some issue in business ethics, I know that today is the day that this reporter has to be an expert on business ethics, and tomorrow they're going to be writing about, you know, the local tulip festival. or something entirely different. So what I try and do is when there's a story about conflict of interest in you know, on Wall Street or something like that, I try and say, okay, well, here's the quick version of, here's what the definition of conflict of interest is, and you might not even have got that, even from a good reporter. So I try and just give a little more, something between the newspaper story and a full scholarly discussion on a particular topic in business ethics. Okay, so that's just sort of background to tell you why it is that I have an interest in the ethics of blogging. It's because I write a blog, and I'm an ethics professor by day, so I think about ethical things now and then. Okay, so now that tells you why I might be qualified. This tells you why I might not be qualified. I write a blog about ethics, but I basically know nothing about the ethics of blogging. Since I started doing this blog 3.5 years ago, I've read almost nothing that's out there about ethical worries or moves towards bringing ethics to the blogosphere. I know that there are some efforts out there. There's been talk about a blogger's code of ethics. There's lots of talk about, well, what's the difference between bloggers and real journalists? And then there are people who get all angry about that, and they say, you know, we can be real journalists too. And some journalists, some mainstream journalists, are bloggers. And there are bloggers now that go to White House press briefings, right? So, I mean, the bloggers are standing up for themselves. But I don't know anything about it, really. I blog about ethics, but I don't know much about the ethics of blogging. So that's my frank admission that, in a weird way, even though you might expect me to know something about this stuff, I really don't. Okay, so here's a bit from sort of from the point of view of not of topics, but here's sort of just a quick categorization of some of the kinds of bloggers you see out there. And this is not exhaustive. There's nothing very authoritative about this. But you have, for example, you have the journalist bloggers. So you have people who write for newspapers. All the major newspapers now have bloggers. There are corporate bloggers. There are academic bloggers like me or like Tyler Cowen, who's a big name economist who writes a blog. There are author bloggers. In other words, people who basically have a blog to promote their book. There are people who blog for, you know, Greenpeace and other NGOs. There are sort of cause-based bloggers that we could break into the sort of, you know, I'm an activist for a cause because I think animal rights are important, so I'm going to blog about animal rights. Then there are the cause chose me bloggers, so parents of autistic children saying, this is an issue that is in my life and I want to blog about it. Then there are the diary keeping bloggers, the, you know, here's what the cute thing my cat did this morning. And so notice that these aren't topics. These are, you know, where the person writing the blog comes from, okay? And sort of the big distinction that I'm going to kind of point to here today is the difference between journalist bloggers, who are journalists whenever they're not writing blogs, or they're maybe at the same time have a journalist's training. And then there are people like me who are, in terms of reporting things to the public, are kind of amateurs. So I report news stories secondhand and then comment on them and offer what I hope passes for insight, but I have a very different kind of background. I have a PhD in philosophy. I've never been to journalism school. But I'm in a sense kind of playing in that terrain. So let's talk a little bit about ethics for journalist bloggers. And by journalist bloggers, that's not a very tight category, but I basically just mean people who work for a major news outlet are, in some straightforward sense, journalists would perhaps otherwise or in addition be writing something for the print version of the publication. So if you write for the New York Times and also blog for the New York Times, that's the kind of group I have in mind. Ethics for mainstream media journalists, where do those journalists get their sense of integrity, their sense of ethics? Well, a bunch of places. Presumably for a lot of them, not all of them have gone to journalism school, but some of them have, and presumably they start to get their sense of what it means to be a journalist there, the difference between a journalist and someone who just, you know, tells people stuff. They gain some sense of the importance of the media, and we've heard a lot about this already today, you know, what role the media plays both in the lives of individuals and in the lives of a democracy. So here are some of Canada's journalism schools where students start to get that sense. And there's at least some thinking in the professional ethics literature that what unifies a profession is actually its educational basis, right? Is that it's you're an engineer because you went to engineering school, regardless of whether you do electrical engineering, chemical engineering, whatever. What makes you a journalist might, it doesn't work as well for journalism, perhaps, because certainly not all journalists have been to journalism school, but there's you start to get the core set of ideas about ethics and about the integrity of journalism starting in journalism school. Then there are things like the Canadian Association of Journalists, where if you go on their website, you've got their statement of principles that says, you know, here's what we as journalists say to each other and say to you, the public, as the principles we believe in and the principles that we think should guide our behavior in the work we do. Then there is slightly different, there's the Canadian Broadcast Standards Council, which isn't technically a journalism organization, but clearly its members employ a lot of journalists, so there would be some implicit or explicit guidance for journalists who write for or report for organizations in the broadcast media, another normative source. Then there are particular news outlets. This was just the easiest one I found. I couldn't find the one for any of the first few Canadian newspapers that came to mind. Maybe they're on their websites, but the Boston Globe is pretty easy to find. So their newsroom has an ethics policy that says, you know, both, again, saying this is, you know, if you're the journalist, this is where you can look to for ethical guidance, but also as a new reader of the newspaper, I can look to this and see, ah, I see what the Globe is trying to stand for, right? I see what they're doing. Another kind of different source of normativity for journalists is this. I was talking to Andrew about this a bit at lunch. If your readers take issue with what you've had to have to say, or you know, that might be on something of substance, but it might be on the way in which, the slanted way in which you've reported a story, they can write letters to the editor and call you out on it. And so that's another kind of pressure on journalists, mainstream journalists, to conduct themselves in a certain way. So those sorts of, if you're a blogger who is also a journalist by training and by employment, in a mainstream media sense, then you have those kinds of things either governing you or offering guidance. Now, then there's the rest of us, right, who haven't been to journalism school, aren't members of any associations that give us guidance on how to report things fairly and honestly to the public. If you can't read this from the back, it says, we're sure proud of our little Attila. He has totally absorbed the Hun ethic, right? So if there's some ethic out there in the rest of the blogosphere, it's a little more rough and ready, shall we say. Okay, so what ethical issues arise for bloggers? Well, just off the top of my head, again, I gave my mea culpa early on. I don't actually know anything about this stuff, but it seems to me, and I have, you know, glanced at some of the, they have these web pages out there where people worry about ethical issues in blogging. Conflict of interest, right? You want to, in particular, there's been worries about bloggers who are, you know, unbeknownst to their readers, in the employ of various commercial interests. Truthfulness, you know, people would like to think that you're mostly telling the truth when you blog. What else? Accuracy, which is technically separate from truthfulness, though there might be some overlap. Correction of errors, right? I frankly have very little guidance in terms of if someone points out to me that I've made a mistake in my blog, there's actually, from what I understand, there's this norm in the blogging community, if there's such a thing as the blogging community, which there really isn't, so it's kind of a misnomer, that says if you can't just go back and edit. Technically, it's very simple to go back and edit a blog entry. I can change history, right? I can change it so that last year I predicted the outcome of the American election. But you're not supposed to do that, I guess. So that's not sort of written in stone anywhere. It's much easier in the blogosphere to change your errors without admitting that you made any errors, at least not admitting it publicly. All kinds of stuff about attribution and credit, right? And this, we have these conventions about, you know, you give a tip of the hat to the person who sent you the story that you're blogging about, things like that. But also stuff about, you know, where your sources of information are. And then the big sort of meta issue is one of accountability. And for the most part, bloggers just aren't very accountable to anybody, by and large, with exceptions. Okay, so what hope is there for finding some guidance on these issues for someone like me, someone who's a blogger, who thinks about ethics, but again, doesn't have necessarily have ready at hand any sources of guidance. Well, there's a, it's getting to be an old joke about this that I think is kind of relevant. What are the three things you need to be a blogger? Your laptop, your basement, and your virginity. And that's basically, luckily that's not exactly true. Two out of three are essential. No, but what the, I mean, the reason this joke is funny, well, there's lots of reasons it's funny probably. I won't get into an analysis of the humor. But the basic intuition here is that there's nothing stopping you. You can be a widely read blogger, blogging, writing as an obscure individual, working in utter isolation in your parents' basement, right, alternating between your video games and your blogging, not sitting on the whatever floor of the New York Times building in New York, right? You don't have to be part of some major news organization to have an enormous, in principle at least, have an enormous audience on the World Wide Web. So a couple of words about social isolation and ethics. And here, what I'm actually talking about for my purposes here, it's not social isolation per se. We're not really talking about working in your parents' basement. I don't live with my parents anymore. But I am subject to a kind of professional isolation, right? Precisely because I don't, my blogging doesn't happen among a community of bloggers in any real sense. I'm kind of isolated. I have no newsroom, right? So never mind having a newsroom ethics policy. I don't have a newsroom, right? I have a couple of friends who write blogs, but we mostly don't play that kind of role for each other. I have no editor, right? I have people who point out typos, but I don't have an editor. I have no one who's going to come down on me or, heaven forbid, fire me. Like, I literally can't be fired from this job. It's great. It's in some ways, it's better than tenure. Because you know, when you have tenure, you can still be fired for not doing your job. Blogging, I literally can't be fired. I have no training as a blogger, so I can't look back to what my profs taught me in blogger school to think about, you know, what is it that, you know, what is the essence of what it is to be a blogger. I'm not a member of any bloggers association, so I can't look to their code of ethics. And unlike the journalist who is at least subject to the public wrath through the letters to the editor page, well, I get comments on my blog. You can post comments on my blog, but only if I approve them, right? And there's really not much negative consequence for me just deciding I don't like your comment, especially if it's critical of things I've said. And I try not to do that, but I could. So there have been some attempts at sort of coming up with a code of ethics for bloggers, and these are some of them that I found far too recently for them to be of any actual relevance to me. So a couple of different groups, and there's even a Facebook group that sort of tries to promote a blogger's code of ethics. Clearly this has been a topic. I mean, the reasons are pretty obvious, right? You've got a broader reach than mainstream media had 10 years ago, but with almost zero accountability, there's obvious reason to, you know, to be concerned, right? There's, you can see people saying, well, gee, maybe we should think about this a bit. So those are the possible sources of normativity. The obvious questions that arise for someone like me in terms of, you know, looking at those sorts of documents, what ethical principles should guide me? Where should I look for guidance, right? Given that those questions aren't obvious, given my mostly non-professional role as a blogger, what group or guild or association should or could I affiliate, and who is my peer group, right? I know as a professor who my peer group is. I'm a member of a department, I'm a member of a university, I'm a member of a faculty association, I'm a member of the Canadian Philosophical Association and the Canadian Society for the Study of Practical Ethics and a few other Society for Business Ethics, but who's my peer group in terms of my role as a blogger? But the bigger question is, who cares? Why should I care in particular? What could possibly motivate me to ask any of those self-reflective questions? I mean, if I weren't an ethics professor, right? I mean, I think about ethical problems at breakfast, so I can't not think about this. But beyond that, what would motivate me, frankly, to care at all about any of those questions? And I frankly think there's not much good reason to care. So here's the anti-ethics bit of my talk. I tend to think, although I not exclusively, from a theoretical point of view, I tend to think of ethics as an instrumental entity, as something that it's a tool that we use to help us get along better in society. And so the question that has to arise is what goal or need of mine would be met by adopting some external code of ethics, right? So if you came up to me and when they start doing the membership drive for the Bloggers Association and said, join up, you can sign on to our code of ethics. You can, you know, maybe membership's cheap or free or whatever, and I would say, well, that's great, but why on earth would I want an extra set of constraints on my behavior? I'm having fun, right? What need of mine would that fulfill? So compare the situation of the journalist, like a legitimate, real journalist, who see themselves as having a public service ethos, right? See themselves as fulfilling this mission that several speakers talked about today, that we really value in the media. A code of ethics for real journalists is part of you know, their public promise to contribute to public discourse in a democracy, things like that. For newspapers, presumably it has something to do with the need for credibility, right? You can trust the Boston Globe because they've got a code of ethics they adhere to. They hire journalists who have some sense of what the profession is all about, things like that. You can understand why those folks would want a code of ethics, but my situation is quite different from that. I also have no need to fend off regulation, right? Some professions adopt ethics codes because they say if we regulate ourselves, then the government's not going to come in and tell us what to do. As far as I can tell, you know, free speech laws are going to protect me from saying almost, you know, basically anything short of slander or libel. So I don't have to fend off regulation by adopting some kind of code of ethics. Well, what about just plain old, you know, Chris, you're supposed to be an ethical guy, you'd like to do the right thing. That's true, fair enough, but I'm kind of agnostic about the role of bloggers in society today, and I'm just not sure what ethics should guide them, and I sort of think it's probably not all that clear that there's a code of ethics out there that should tell us what, at this point, what bloggers should be and what kinds of rules they should adhere to. So I think there is no good answer that I've seen yet as to why I, as an individual blogger, should search very hard for an answer to, you know, what kinds of, you know, which of the competing codes of blogger ethics should I sign on to? I think the obvious answer is none of them. They're not any good for anything. They're not any use to me. Okay, a couple of, and so I basically make do by muddling through with kindergarten ethics, right? I try not to hurt people. I tell the truth, or if not the truth, at least something entertaining but close enough to the truth to get through, which is what most of us do in regular conversation, right? So I, you know, try to do the best I can by my own lights. Okay, the description of the conference said something about the competitive environment. I thought it'd be worth saying a little bit about that. Blogging is, well, not competitive directly economically. Almost nobody makes a living at it. I remember someone telling me a couple years ago that no one makes a living at it. Maybe some people do now, or people that blog as part of their job. Essentially, in the current blogging environment, though, there's not much to gain from adopting a code, right? In fact, the competitive environment that I find myself in is exactly the opposite. It's more likely to reward zeal, creativity, and controversy, and the goodies to be had, right? I'm not being paid to blog, but people are getting book deals, right? People are leveraging blogs into book deals. Talking to a publisher currently, myself, I know a couple of people who have got their jobs through their blogs, and they sometimes get attention from real journalists, right? I did a series of interviews with CBC over Christmas because of my work as a blogger, and, you know, it's not a direct benefit, but it raises my profile, my university likes it, things like that. So there are goodies to be had from being noticed, not necessarily from being the most reputable source available, right? So given that competitive environment, maybe you should worry about bloggers, but why should I worry about myself as a blogger, right? About the ethical values that I follow. Okay, so conclusions. Most bloggers aren't professional journalists. That doesn't mean that they necessarily lack ethics, right? Bloggers can be good people too, But what it means is they lack a source and maybe a motive for professional ethics or something like a professional ethics for bloggers. Media today are, you know, famously in flux. Newspapers are collapsing and cutting back. And I think given that the role for bloggers of all stripes is completely up for grabs at this point, right? I have no idea whether bloggers are going to be running the world 5 years from now or will have faded into obscurity. The death of the blog was declared several years ago, and it turned out to be an exaggeration, but it could still happen. Blogging hasn't gone away, but it could. And so I think it's probably too soon to unify ethical norms, and certainly too soon to motivate me to line up behind a unified set of ethical norms. So there's, in the end, little to motivate this blogger, at least, to adopt an ethics of blogging. Thank you.
Chris, thank you. That was delightful. So I just want to make clear some distinctions, which are very much in your talk, but I just want to spread them out a little bit.
Yeah.
So you've got a claim about the kind of positive associational ethic that might be adopted, and which could, may or may not actually track people's actual moral responsibilities. And I think at least at this stage in its development, you're absolutely right about that. Then there's the question of whether or not it's been adopted, whether there is a special ethic for bloggers. And I think you're pretty convincing that it isn't much of a reason to think that there's a kind of incipient profession here that has special normative requirements that, if things go as normally, then should be encoded in the positive black letter law of a profession. And then, of course, you acknowledge that there's kindergarten ethics. And that's where I want to pick up. Maybe kindergarten ethics we didn't learn very well in kindergarten, or we didn't learn and of course, I don't think you'll take issue with that. But so it could be that kindergarten ethics is actually quite binding and actually a little surprising and leads to surprising conclusions. And so we can engage as kind of ordinary people reflecting on our what makes for good and bad, right or wrong blogging, and that might give us, it might have more bite than you're suggesting, but yeah. I think you will probably agree that it has more bite. But let me just float one possible suggestion about how you could have something other than mere ordinary common variety garden ethics here. And it's not because it's something special to this emerging kind of role of profession, but because when you're acting in writing to a large and anonymous public, you're acting in something of a public role. You're acting as a citizen and as a public citizen. And perhaps, I'm not quite sure about this, but I am inclined to think that it is so, that when one acts as a citizen, one has certain kinds of obligations that are different than what you have simply when you're sitting around a coffee table and chatting with your friends. So for example, when we're voting, I actually agree with Jack Rawls on this, that when you're voting, you're subject to a set of constraints that you aren't subject to when you're simply just kind of shooting the political breeze. Sure. with your folks. So to some extent, again, it depends on your topic, but if what you're engaging in is commentary on politics, then it could be that you are subject to the normative demands of a citizen. And that may, in fact, be both different and more restraining than the kindergarten ethics that you talked about.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Clearly, myself, I do feel that I'm subject to a number of different kinds of constraints, right? So, for example, I won't go back to the slide, but my blog says at the top, either at the top or at the sideline, Chris McDonald, PhD, and then it says Chris teaches philosophy at St. Mary's University, and that's big credibility grab, right? I'm saying, here's why you should listen to what, this isn't, what my cat did that's cute this morning, plus my thoughts on corporate malfeasance. It's, Professor McDonald's thoughts on business ethics. And so, to a certain extent, I think that I take at least that set of, the professoriate doesn't have a code of ethics. There are particular associations that have codes of ethics, and I, at least one association I belonged to, I threatened I would have to quit if they developed a code of ethics because I said it was not an association, not my primary association, and I was partly making it as a rhetorical point, sort of the same point I'm making here, which is if you're going to give me new rules to follow, you're going to have to show me, convince me why it's valuable to stay a member. But I do feel those sorts of, I need to represent. The university's logo isn't there, but the university's name is there, and so I need to. I'm sort of honor bound not to make too much of an ass of myself. And I think I also am, in some sense, for some people, I'm probably the first philosopher they've ever read, right, for some of these people that read my blog. And so I feel some responsibility to my academic discipline to, you know, equip myself in a certain way and not, and neither get too highfalutin and turn people off the way first year philosophy classes sometimes do, or to go so entirely untheoretical that people say, well, you know, anybody could have done that. So I do feel that. The citizenship thing makes, you know, that makes a certain, a good deal of sense. It's certainly not special to blogging, as you acknowledge. The other thing is, though, that there are sort of competing sets of norms here, right? Like, there's some thought that, I mean, some people want to think that a blog by a professor should be something pretty close to a lecture, or something close to a news item. Other people think it's more like a hallway conversation or, you know, stuff you say over beer, right? And I'm a little bit torn by that, right? Because I think, you know, someone was giving me a hard time, one of the commentators was giving me a hard time about something I wrote on my blog a couple of weeks ago, and it occurred to me that why this was was irking me so much, not that they were challenging my point of view, that was fine, but what was bothering me is that, you know, most, prior to starting writing this blog, I would express myself in print several times a year and stick my neck out several times a year after having thought it through really, really carefully. These days, I stick my neck out several times a week, mostly after having not thought it through all that carefully, because blogging has a different rhythm to it. And sort of part of the cost you pay for that frequency is it's not quite the same as my best opinion, right? It's the quickest thing I can fire off before I have to get to start doing something, my paying job, which is prepare for classes or something like that. So I think there are these sort of competing norms, and it's not at all clear to me whether it's time to settle what the right balancing of those competing and overlapping sets of norms is. But point well taken, for sure.
Saying that I'm shocked, deeply shocked by this. I mean, it seemed to me that you were dangerously close to expressing just some kind of egoism. I mean, what's in it for me? And, you know, anybody can ask that. The ordinary journalist, the lawyer, the doctor, all of us can ask that. Mm. And, you know, as Plato showed, you know, on a certain view of what's in your self-interest, if you can get away with it, then there is nothing in it for you. And if that's, you know, I hope that's not what you mean. But if it's not what you mean, then I don't really see the problem. I mean, you don't have to belong to an association to have there be guidelines that govern you or ought to govern you. I mean, the things that you mentioned, conflict of interest, accuracy, truthfulness, correction of errors, attribution, accountability is a little more complicated. What's wrong with that? Why aren't you bound by those things? Why don't you see yourself as bound? You don't have to belong to any kind of group or association that has a formal code of ethics. And, you know, we academics, some disciplines have them, some disciplines don't. Many of us don't have the slightest idea whether our discipline is governed by a code of ethics, but that doesn't mean we're not governed by ethical principles. Everybody is.
Sure.
So sure. Do you disagree with that?
No, I mean, that's what I flippantly referred to as kindergarten ethics, right? I think we all have
wait a second. But so what's kindergarten ethics?
You know, don't hurt people, clean up your own messes.
Well, but of course you've
tell
got
the truth mostly.
Sometimes you're going to have conflict.
Sure. I mean, two things. One is that, as I said, my approach to ethics in all cases, is that ethics is instrumental. Okay.
What does that mean?
It means it's got to have a problem to solve.
Oh, isn't ethics so instrumental?
Well, frankly, all ethics. I mean, I'm more or less vaguely in a contractarian.
But that doesn't mean it's just an instrument to your own self-interest or something like that, right?
No, not straightforwardly, no. But what I want to say is, like, show me what the problem is to be solved, and then we can start talking about what the right ethical norms are to help mediate it. But until there's a problem, and the problem could, you know, if you could convince me, look, you know, the world is going to hell in a handbasket because bloggers are generally, you know, running amok. There's not enough attention to conflict of interest. You know, so conflict of interest is actually a pretty good example, right? The professions and increasingly the world of business, conflict of interest is a pretty special category. It's not part of kindergarten ethics, right? Nobody learns about conflict of interest from their parents, right? It's a relatively new moral category. It's only been part of the lexicon for the last 50 years or something like that. And most people don't know what the definition of it is. Most, you know, the average person, the average blogger, certainly just doesn't know what the definition of conflict of interest is. At some point, it may well be that bloggers as a community, if there could be one, would need to figure that out. They need to, if I were to write a blogger's code, I would say, well, one of the things you've got to understand is what conflict of interest is, and that's a technical concept that's going to have to sort of be dealt with collectively because it's... Because or if it's a special problem for the profession, weakly speaking, right? Conflict of interest is a special problem for lawyers. That's why they've got rules about it, right? But conflict of interest isn't part of necessarily of everyday life. So that's an example of something that if you could make the case that there's a conflict of interest problem to be solved, right, then you'd have a better sense of where to start formulating a set of ethical rules to govern it, right? So is that starting to help? Really not entirely an egoist, but I do think I. But I do think ethics has to. It's got to have a problem to solve, right? And at this point,
the problem is just should I when I write my blog, may I just say whatever I feel like, or can I distort?
Yeah, no, I think telling people the truth is mostly a good idea, right? So that's why I do that. But sometimes, you know, so for example, the other day in my. I probably shouldn't start just trotting out examples from my own blog. Somebody wrote something that I thought was not very smart in the Globe and Mail. Happened to be another philosopher. Not in the Globe and Mail. In the Boston Globe. Happened to be another philosopher. Said something ridiculous about business ethics. And I said, well, you don't know what you're talking about. So I wrote on my blog, with no accountability, of course. I said, you know, you've just misunderstood the field. And I said, you know, he was talking about the philosophers who do this corporate ethics role inside corporations. And I said... You're just misunderstanding the field. There are philosophers who do business ethics, and some of them have some involvement with the corporate world, but mostly the corporate world, people who do business ethics in the corporate world are lawyers and accountants. And I didn't fact check. I don't actually have statistics on that, right? So I did my best to tell the truth, but I also am not part of the journalistic world where I would have had to wait till tomorrow and make a bunch of phone calls and maybe not find the information and do well. Frankly, I don't even know how journalists do that. I think in blogging as in anything else, you should try and tell the truth. But it's not clear to me that, you know, signing on to a code of ethics, for example, that tells me exactly what that should mean to me is going to advance any values I care about, whether that's self-interest, which is one of the things I care about, or the interests of my readers or the interests of my profession or anything else that's valuable to me.
You make an important distinction between professional journalists and everybody else. I mean, you even say right there, conclusions, most bloggers aren't professional journalists, blah, blah, blah. And your interest is the everybody else. But actually, my question, I don't know if you'll be interested in my question, because it's about the ethics of blogging for professional journalists. And in fact, I would even address the question to any of the professional journalists in the room who may have views on this or who may have blogs. I'm wondering, because this is something I've actually been thinking about because of a project that I'm involved in, but do the same rules of journalistic rigor apply to a blog? For a journalist, who may be attached to a news organization, I mean, Andrew works for Maclean's, he has a blog. In your own mind, when you're on your blog, would you take certain liberties that you may not take when you're writing for the magazine? Do journalists, there aren't the same editorial controls on what a journalist is writing. The same journalist on a blog that is institutionally connected to the news organization, is it okay to say certain things in the blog that they could not or would not or would not be allowed to by the gatekeepers of this of the very same institution? I think this is a really interesting question that I haven't actually seen anything written on this.
But it's starting to come up in some libel cases, for example. And it's something that I think is going to take on increasing importance in coming years.
Yeah, the short answer is that I don't know the answer to the question in terms of what the practices of the actual journalists who are also bloggers. Maybe we can talk about that after. But certainly, I mean, I think the one thing I would, putting on my hat as not as a blogger but as an ethics professor, the one thing you would sort of hope for is some way of signaling that distinction signaling that distinction to the public, right? Because if I go onto the New York Times blog part of their website, I'm basically expecting New York Times quality, including fact checking and truthfulness. And if there's, and I don't know how you signal to the public if you're playing a little more fast and loose in the blog area, because basically when I go to, I think the ethics should probably follow the brand, unless there's some kind of signaling done to distinguish, the branded blogs from the, the thing the guy who happens to be a journalist writes on the weekends, for amusement about because he's a Civil War buff or something like that.
I just thought I'd mention quickly I have a bit of interest in American politics and American liberal blogs in the U.S.
Sorry. And I thought it might be interesting. I just wanted to point out back in the run-up to the Iraq War, for instance, one of the issues that galvanized a lot of liberal bloggers in the U.S., be it Daily Kos, MyDD, Talking Points Memo, etc., was what they perceived to be the ethical failings of mainstream American media institutions, be the major networks, New York Times, Washington Post, etc. And that's what essentially galvanized the movement, and in fact, they played a very significant role in Barack Obama's campaign. So I thought that might be an interesting contrast to point out that in a lot of what galvanized the blogging community in the U.S. was the reverse of this, the sense of the ethical failings of mainstream journalists.
Right. No, it's an interesting point. I think that's part of the sort of, the way I would put it is that there's kind of a diversity argument to be made that bloggers are playing a huge number of roles, including critical roles. On the other hand, I think. Whatever the criticisms are of mainstream media, I still think there's, I think most people agree, there's still something valuable there. There's still something, I still believe things I read in the Globe and Mail mostly because it's a reputable news outlet, whether you think it's got biases or problems or and so on, and that goes for almost all of the American news outlets too. I think there is something to be said for an organization that both employs people that care, right? And by and large, from what I've seen, journalists are passionate about the work they do and the role they play in civil society, and organizations that care about their reputations, right? I mean, some of these brands are enormously powerful and valuable, not just financially valuable, but valuable to their mission, and they presumably work pretty hard to guard those reputations pretty jealously, and that matters to me as a newsreader.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris, for the presentation. I will have, I will have a question. Maybe there are two ways to apprehend your presentation. The first is, I think it's your perspective to ask yourself if a singular unified ethics for bloggers exists, and how to define the moral obligation that comes from. But I'm just wondering if there is no another way around to look at the problem and to see. In fact, is it relevant to try to identify a unified ethics for blogging? Or can we say that in some extent the moral obligations that are borne by the bloggers derived partly are coming from the profession or the occupation or the motivation of the bloggers? I will be more precise. If you are a journalist blogger, we evoked the fact, but if you are a journalist blogger, if you are an academic blogger, if you are an NGO blogger, you don't face the same moral obligation due to the fact that your occupation outside of the web is different. And even if you don't want to be subjected to your outside moral obligation, you will have partly to face those obligations. Why? Because people will expect some kind of behavior, some kind of ethical conduct, even in the blogs. So my question is, where you are close to which interpretation, the unified interpretation or the pluralistic interpretation? And the second question will be, if we take the second implication, it will mean that it will give rise to a very different question, not about the content of the ethics of blogging, but the effect of blogging on former moral obligation. The fact that maybe they are leveled down or modified due to the fact that you are blogging. So you have some kind of professional obligation, ethical obligation, that are transformed due to the very fact that you are blogging, but are coming from your original profession, occupational motivation. Thanks.
Okay. There was a lot to handle there. I'll say this and see if it helps with some or most of that. I'm not entirely skeptical about the idea of a unified ethic for blogging. I'm more skeptical about the idea of a unified ethic for blogging than I am about various subset ethics for various subsets of blogging. So, for example, I can imagine. I think values I care about and that I think are valuable would be advanced, perhaps, if university professors who write blogs about ethics, of which there are a few of us, got together and sort of settled on what role we think we play and what kinds of, right? So there's like a subset, right, where I say, here's a meaningful community. Here are people whose feedback on my work I care about, who I am in some sense, we're part of a community in a normatively meaningful sense, and I could see having a code of ethics for that subset of bloggers, right? Again, because what you would say here is, look, so someone says, hey, Chris, we want to set up this code of ethics, and I say, well, great, but what on earth for? What's it going to add either to my life or things I care about, right? Because I'm not trying to be entirely egoistic. And if people said, look, it would be a real contribution to the field of applied ethics and the way it's perceived in the public. Okay, now you've got my attention. If you can make that case to me, right, then I'll say, okay, I would help to developing that code of ethics and signing on to it. Because if you can make the case that there's a role being played in what I take to be a socially important subset of blogs. I'm skeptical about an ethics for blogging in general, but not skeptical about an ethics for particular kinds of blogs. And in part because, and I think in part, what you're doing is you're bootstrapping. It might just be a practical thing rather than a normative thing, but you're bootstrapping off membership in another occupational group, which is, right, I've got these peers who are, some of them philosophers, some of them not, who are writing blogs about ethics, and I could see sort of joining forces with them and being able to find some common ground to guide our collective behavior.
All right, really quickly, three things. So two suggestions and okay. One question. So first suggestion, maybe if I can provide a normative metaphor, maybe it would be useful to think of blogging, the act of blogging as the same thing as the act of posting something on a public billboard, for instance. So maybe the normative obligation of someone that does that are not as high as a journalist obligation, but there might still be obligation. We still have moral expectation towards someone that would do such a thing. So okay. First suggestion. Second suggestion, maybe the first normative principle on which you could build an ethic of blogger is the fact that we generally want the internet to provide information of a greater quality. So I think that most people will agree with that. It's a really strong normative intuition. So maybe it's a good starting point to developing an ethics for blogger. And third, the question, so who say exactly that bloggers should have an ethics? Because maybe if you would clarify that also, it would help to see what you're defending exactly and what are the types of argument you want to answer.
Yeah. I think the first two, I think that you can find lots of different kinds of metaphors for. But I think again, blogs are so diverse that way. Some of them are very much like a posting in a public place. Some of them are more like an act of citizenship. Others are, much more like, conversation over beer. And the rules for truthfulness in all of these situations vary, right? I mean, the rules for truthfulness over beer, you know, honestly, I caught the fish that was, you know, that's not called lying, that's called, well, Harry Frankfurt called it bullshit, right? Which is not, was different from lying, right? This is an actual philosophical paper about, anyways, the philosophers in the room probably know the paper. So there's different normative rules for different kinds of pronouncements, but I think that diversity is, you know, the diversity of blogs mirrors the diversity of those kinds of real world pronouncements. So let me jump to the last one, who's calling for ethics. I guess, honestly, I don't really know the answer to that. I mean, I've been hearing rumblings, right? I mean, it's one of the curses of living online, right, is that you know, I know that I read some blogs somewhere once upon a time over the last several years where people were wringing their hands about this sort of thing. But mostly it seemed, you know, there were stories about there was that time when someone on a blog said something untrue, therefore we need a code of ethics, right, which is either an overreaction, right, or at least an under-explained and maybe under-motivated move. And I think people need to think clearly about, you know, what the costs and benefits of promoting a particular take on blogger ethics. Again, I'm not in favor of a Wild West necessarily, right? As I said, I try pretty hard to follow, I disclose, once in a while I get sent books to review or things like that, and I always say, you know, I got sent this book for free, because I've learned that people care to know when someone has sent me something for free, there's room for worry about conflict of interest, so I disclose that sort of thing. But it's not clear who's calling for it, and if I had a better sense of who was calling for it, maybe I'd have a better idea how to respond to it. It's true. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.